So we're going to be speaking today about the Chiyur Chafshi. What is it and how do we utilize it? So it says in Pirkei Avos, Hu haya omer chaviv adam shenever betelem chi b'yaseir nadas le shenever betelem shenever betelem elokim bara es adam. How precious is man, for he is created in the image of God. What does it mean he's created in the image of God? The Rabbanim explained that unlike all other creations, man was given free will. He was given Bechir Chafshi. The Almighty gave us a unique gift, a divine spark called free will. And the result of this unique power is that more than any other creature, human beings have the ability to shape and change the worlds. If we use our free will correctly, we can beautify and enhance the world. If we misuse it, we plunder and destroy the world. Reflecting on the awesomeness of this power, David HaMelech said, "When I raise my eyes to the heavens and see the stars, I must say, what is man that you should take notice of him? What is the son of man that you should care of him? And yet you have left him a little less than God." Right? The tachsiruhu ma'at melekim. You left him a little bit less than God. You've crowned him with meaning, honor, and beauty. As awesome as the Rabbanu Shalom is, he made man just a little bit less than him himself. He gave him the gift of free will. And each of us have the power to perfect the world. We just have to learn how to utilize it. Mishnah in Avos, the Sefer of the Mishnah, ended off saying, Chibi Yisera Neidas Loi Shenivar Betzelem Elikim, Shenemar Betzelem Elikim Baras Adam. Greater is the sign of our preciousness to the Rabbanu Shalom is that he told us that we were created in the image of God. In other words, greater than the gift of free will itself is the gift that he told us that he gave us the gift of free will. How is that greater than the gift of free will itself? Right? Are we supposed to pat ourselves on the back and say, hey, look at the gift we got? And what does it mean? The greater gift is that we know that we have free will. To answer this question, I want to tell you a metaphor for it, and consider this as consider this, and based on this, we'll understand the answer. Imagine a homeless person. He's going around, and he sleeps in the streets, and he carries his bag with him all over, begging for bread, and every once in a while rummaging through the garbage. Imagine you put $10 million in his bag, $10 million, right? A couple thousand dollars, he can have an apartment. He doesn't have to live in the streets anymore. Nice and warm. Some more money, he'll have food every month. I mean, he'll be able to live it up. The problem is, you never told him that you put $10 million in his bag. So his whole life he's going around, still living as a homeless person, even though he has $10 million in his bag. It's a greater gift to tell him that you put the $10 million in his bag than it is to just put it there. Because if he never finds it and he never knows that he has it, it's not going to do anything for him. As potentially powerful as free will is, if we don't know that we have it, and it's badly underutilized, we're never going to use it. So now that we have it, and we know we have it, let's clarify what it is, so that we can use it to its fullest capacity. Free will, roughly defined, means the ability to choose. Right? In Jewish thinking, free will has a much more distinct definition, and not all things that we choose are things that we call a free will choice. For example, if I chose chocolate over vanilla ice cream, we don't call that free will. That's just a matter of preference. Animals could do that too. It's not bechir chafshi. Animals don't have bechir, yet they'll choose kibbles and bits over whatever the other food is.
What's your makor for that?
Rav Noah Feinberg. And he brings makoros in the back. I didn't go through all of them yet, but probably here also. Okay, that's an exercise of preference, something animals could do also. When we refer to free will, we're talking about a type of decision that's unique to man. Most people believe that the choices we're talking about when we refer to free will are choices between good and evil, right? So let's take a closer look. If we take a look at the Torah and see what Judaism has to say about the definition of free will, we'll find that in the Torah, Hashem says the following. in Devarim, Perek Lamed, Pasuk Yud Tes, Rei Nasati Lefnechem, Esachayim V'Esamavis, Esatoy V'Esara, Esabrachav V'Esaklol. See that I've put before you life and death, good and evil, blessing and barrenness. Then the Torah advises us, choose life so that you may live. Most people think free will is a choice between good and evil. But the Torah doesn't tell us to choose good or evil. The Torah says choose life. Because Bechir Chavshi really goes beyond just choosing good and evil. Even the most vile, immoral person in the world, in his mind, thinks he's doing good. He rationalizes it to himself. Right? He'll find a reason. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, let's be evil today. They say, what can I do that's good? And you know, whatever it is that they decide to do, they rationalize it for themselves so that they're doing something good. They won't look at themselves as being evil. Okay? According to the Torah, the problem isn't that we choose evil, it's that we choose death. Some people choose death right away, and some people choose amortized death, but we're choosing death, right? The real arena of human beings' free will is between life and death, and that's why the Rabbi Shalom doesn't say Ubacharta Batoif, he says Ubacharta Bachayim. So what does it mean when the Torah says that free will is a choice between life and death, Ubacharta Bachayim or the Mavis? Who amongst us chooses death? Nobody wants to do that. So in order to understand what we mean when we say when human beings are constantly faced with the choice of life and death, let's analyze the ultimate death decision. What is that? Suicide, right? Ending it right now. What's the core of someone's choice for suicide? What's the person really after when they pick up the gun and put it to their head to end it all? Or jump off a building? What's driving him? What's he running away from? So, the answer is, he wants to avoid pain. He wants to escape. Escape the pains of life. He wants to escape having to face those pains and living through them. In the words of Shakespeare, to be or not to be, that is the question. Whether to withstand the slings of and the arrows of outrageous fortune, or by taking arms against fate to end it all. To sleep. That's what he's looking for. He wants to sleep. Let me give you an example. Imagine somebody's about to jump off of a building, right? Television newsmen come over to him and say, give us an explanation. The world has a right to know why you're jumping off the building. And he goes, okay. I'm devastated. You know, I lost $10 million on the market. I'm wiped out. The pain's too great. I have to end it all. The reporter says, please tell me before you go. Do you have any money left? He goes, well, there's the chateau in Switzerland. I have my yacht. The Rolls Royce. I guess I could put together about $1.5 million. $1.5 million. That's what most people make. You're gonna give it up for $1.5 million? My friend, you don't know how painful it is to lose $10 million. The reporter says back, could you make it back? So the guy goes to him, tell me, how much do you make a year? $25,000. I can make it back a lot faster than you will. So why are you jumping? You can make it back. You don't know the pain of losing $10 million. And he jumps. Right? What was he trying to do? He was trying to escape the pain of going through life after losing $10 million and going through that effort and that pain to get it back. He wanted to escape the reality. And that's the easy way out, is just to end it. The ultimate comfort. Once we see suicide underneath it all, what's the desire? What's the motivation? A desire to escape. We can understand what the Torah says, choose life. Death, or escape from responsibility, is a choice that is available to all of us every second of the day. Suicide is only the most extreme choice of death. But when we make decisions of escapism, that's also choosing death, just a little slower. In life, there are many other ways we could choose death. We could choose to sit in front of the TV. We could choose to space out. We could choose a lot of different things. Kill time. Instead of using the ability, the time, to live and to grow. But you quit because it was too difficult. The man who jumped off the bridge did so because he didn't want to face his problem. We need to have, we don't need to have difficult problems in order to seek escape. We all choose escape now and then, because the effort that's involved in accomplishing what needs to be done, we look at it as so great, we don't want to face it. Every moment we're alive, we use our free will to choose between life and death, reality or escapism. It's a constant choice. We either make the choice to take the pain in order to grow, or we quit. How we resolve the conflict is where greatness lies. Our greatness is found in using our free will to live, to fight, and to accomplish, rather than to run away. So now, I'm going to describe 5 stages of free will. 5 stages of the struggle. And once we keep grasp that concept, it's still going to take a long time to master it. Right? It takes a lifetime to master it. But we have to have the concepts in order to be able to work at mastering it. So, the first level of free will is self-awareness. Before you can master the power of free will, you have to become aware of life choices that you're making. It's a constant stream of decisions. Decisions are expressions of our choice. So first we have to become sensitive to the fact that we're constantly making these choices. We have to monitor the choices. And then we'll begin to use our free will actively, not passively. In other words, if you use your free will, in order to use your free will, first put it in the periscope. What decisions in life do I currently make? Why do I make those decisions? What led me to them? Right? How do I know this? And now as we're listening, right, now we're also making a decision. When we're listening now, do I want to know this? Is it a more serious thing that I bargained for? Have I decided to daydream or to listen what the speaker is saying? What's, you know, why am I here? Right? So let's become aware of the fact that we're constantly making decisions and what those decisions are. Don't let your decisions just happen. Take control. Ask yourself, is this the decision I want to make? If it isn't, change it. Be in charge of your ability to make these choices. When I was still in America, I was working as a pension actuary. I went to an actuarial conference, and the motivational speaker said something that I wrote down and I kept with me since then for the last 6 years. So whenever you come to a life choice, always ask yourself, what would the person I want to be in 5 years do in the current situation?
Say that again.
What would the person I want to be in 5 years do in the current situation with the current choice? Because we all have goals for ourselves. We all want to get somewhere. And we all have those goals based on the thought process that we went through and that we constantly reanalyze. See, is this really where I want to go? Well, if that's where you want to go, then when you get there, what kind of decision will you make now? Because that's the kind of decision you're going to have to make in order to get there. Be conscious of the decisions you're making and make them yours. Second level of free will, don't be a puppet of society. And don't be a puppet of your own past decisions. Once you're consciously making decisions, analyze why you made them. What led you to the decision? Is it something that you grew up with from society? If so, where did it come from in society? Is it right or wrong? Is it based on a decision you made in the past? Or does that still apply? Right? Factors change every day. Even if it's a decision I made yesterday, I have to reanalyze it today because now I'm a new person. Constantly analyze, focus, constantly come to the decision again on your own. Don't be a puppet. The third level of free will is to realize that there's this disparity between what your body desires and what your soul desires. Body versus soul. Your body wants to go back to the ultimate comfort. Wants to slip into a sleep, an everlasting sleep, and go back to being dust. Your soul wants to achieve greatness, cling closer to the abundance level. The Gemara tells us that within each of us, there's a constant battle, right, between what our soul wants and what our body wants. And regarding this battle, the Chovas Havavah says, a mashal, a group of soldiers came back from war, and they had just won, and they were singing and drinking, and joyful. An old wise man came over to them and said, you just won the war, the battle that you had over there. Now you should realize that you're in the middle of an even bigger battle. A battle within you. Why is it a bigger battle? Because when you win a war, a battle, a physical battle, you're safe for a couple of months. The enemy has to regroup, build its weapons. In this battle, after you win, the enemy's after you again, right away. Most times in battle, if you lose, if you run far enough, the enemy won't chase you for a while. In this battle, even after you lose, he's after you again. The Yitzhar is there. He's trying to chop you all the time. He doesn't rest, and he doesn't let you rest. The battle's constant. What's that war? The war between the soul and the body. Some examples of this. Okay. Anybody here smoke? Well, I'm not. Anybody with me in the boat that they have to watch our diets? It's a constant battle. Right?
It's a constant loss.
What?
It's a constant loss.
But the battle is there nonetheless. I mean, before, you know, I'm on a diet, right? What happens? I decide I'm going on a diet, and my wife makes cookies. So, either I could pick up the cookie, which I've been smelling the whole time she's been cooking it, and I could say, you know what, just one little cookie, and then I'll start the diet. Or, I'll start the diet now, yeah, but one little cookie's not going to ruin it. You know, it's just one cookie. Because the body knows what happens. You have one cookie, and you're gone. There's no such thing as one cookie. You're going to keep going. So, you ask yourself, should I take it? Shouldn't I take it? Right? You're doing battle with yourself. You're not schizophrenic. The body's trying to get you, and you're trying to fight the body. Sometimes we lose, sometimes we don't. In Judaism, we say that the war being fought between the body and the soul wants you to jog, right? It's good, there's a purpose, you'll be fit, you'll be healthy. That'll help you to learn better. That'll help you to strive and get through life better. The body says, leave me alone, I want to sleep. The soul says, give up smoking, it's going to harm you. The body says, I can't quit. Come on, let's live, the body says. So the soul says, the body says, oh, your requirements are too lofty. What's the big deal if we die a little earlier? But at least we'll have been comfortable. That's the battle we face constantly. The body wants to take it easy, to escape. Ultimately, whether or not we know it, ultimately, to die. That's the ultimate escape. The soul wants to do what's meaningful, what's right, and what's productive. Right now, even as we're learning, the soul's saying, hey, this might be important for my life, let's listen, pay attention. The body says, don't take this stuff too seriously, we've got vacation coming. Besides, we lived just fine until now. Why do we have to listen to this form? It possibly change. You know what the ultimate desire in the soul is? To live fully and vibrantly. To be completely alive with every fiber of your being. You know what the ultimate desire of the body is? To sleep. To exist in perpetual comfort. To slip into oblivion, into death, rather than make the effort to confront life head on. In order to win the war within yourself, you first have to learn to distinguish between the cravings of your body and the cravings of your soul. The aspirations of your soul. In other words, what does the body feel like doing? What does the soul want to accomplish? Make yourself a list. What does the body want? Comfort, sleep, indulgence, excuses. What does the soul want? Greatness, understanding, meaning. Right? Constant struggle. We have to be adept in sorting out the differences between what our soul wants and what our body wants. The fourth level of free will, once we know that there's a conflict between the body and the soul, is to side with the soul. Choose to side with the soul. Identify with your soul, not with your body. Meaning, I'm hungry. Am I hungry or is my body hungry? Let's figure it out. Am I hungry because I don't have the strength to continue? I need to eat so I can sustain myself? Or is my body hungry? I'm already sustained, but you know, it's good stuff. Let's continue going. Right? And depending on where we are, we should talk it out. If it's me that's hungry because I need to be sustained, fine, I am hungry. If it's just that, you know, I just like it, it's good. So, okay, my body's hungry. My body wants to eat more. My soul doesn't. Because I'm already sustained. My soul's ready to go and continue. Learn and live. The body says, no, it's comfortable, this stuff is good. Let's sit here, indulge a little bit more. We achieve mastery over our body by identifying with our soul. If you mentally distance yourself from your body, from the wants of your body, you could begin to deal with it effectively. if you know your soul, you won't say necessarily, I'm hungry. You'll say, my body wants some food, when it's the body that wants the food. The Torah describes a righteous person as somebody who speaks to his heart, right? Medaber el libcho, the Yaakov Avinu. An evil person, a wicked person, Esav, bilibecha, v'yemer bilibecha, he spoke in his heart. What's the difference? The tzaddik was the soul who mastered his body. He spoke to the body. The rasha was somebody who spoke from the body. The body controlled the neshama. Bilibecha versus elibecha. Tzaddik was elibecha, he was the neshama, and he spoke to the body, he controlled the body. The rasha was bilibecha. In his heart, in his body, from within his body, he spoke out to the soul and controlled the soul. We all want inner peace. The evil man tries to attain the inner peace by having the soul follow the dictates of the body. And the tzaddik lifts the body to do what the soul wants. And in order for you to control your body, you have to be clever. Use the same tricks the body uses on you. Right? Just for 5 minutes and then we'll do that. Right? Just 5 minutes, just a little bit, and then we'll go do whatever. Right? That's what the body does to us. We want to go out and play, we want to go out and do exercise, we want to go out and do whatever it would be helpful to us, meaningful to us. If we have to put a little effort into it, the body says, just 5 minutes of rest, and then we'll go. Just one more cookie, and then we'll start the diet. And say the same thing to the body. Right? Just 5 more minutes of learning, and then we'll go. Right? Let me just take one jog just today, and then it'll be fine. We'll stop. Same exact trick. The body doesn't say, forget the diet, it's okay to be fat, have cake. No, it says, just one little piece of cake, we'll start the diet tomorrow. We have to utilize these same exact tricks. Little by little, as we gain control of our body, it becomes easier and easier, and the body learns to appreciate the desires of the soul. What do I mean? Imagine you decide to go jogging, right? For the first month, body says, come on, it's not worth it, you're killing me. Let's go back to bed, comfort. Let's just sit home. But after a couple months jogging, if you miss one day, the body goes, hey, I missed the pleasure of that jog, what's going on? Because the body could learn to appreciate the aspirations of the soul. But the soul can never learn to appreciate the aspirations of the body. Fifth level of free will is, now that we differentiated the desires of the body versus the aspirations of the soul, fifth level of free will is to make your will Hashem's will. The desire of the soul is to get closer to Hashem. Right? Getting closer to Hashem allows us to get that ultimate pleasure Hashem created us to do. That is what Hashem wants us to do. So we have to think about it. You know, this is what the soul wants, this is what the body wants. The soul wants this because it wants to get closer to Hashem. The body wants this because it wants to be more comfortable. Right? We have to go now and choose, besides just choosing with the soul, we have to choose and focus to make Hashem's will our will, and make our will Hashem's will. Let them coincide. Conflict between the body and the soul is really a conflict between life and death. The body literally wants us to die, and the soul wants to live. The ultimate form of living is eternity. That is, life without any semblance of death. Therefore, attaching ourselves to the Ribbono Shel Olam, who is eternity, is the ultimate, highest, and purest form of life itself. U'b'charta b'chayim, make Hashem's will your will. If you do, you'll be a little bit less than God Himself. Partners in changing the world. So quick recap. First level of free will is not to be a sleepwalker. Realize that we're making decisions. Make these decisions actively. Second level is, don't be a puppet to society's goals. And even to your own decisions, don't be a puppet. Thirdly, be aware of the conflict between your soul and your body. Fourthly, identify with your soul. And finally, make Hashem's will your will. Make your will Hashem's will.
Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I said, you gotta come with